Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an Hour of Mind Power. Today, we have a very special gentleman. Murray Ebner is my guest, and this is a man who has walked a journey in life that I don't think any of us would raise our hands and volunteer for duty to experience. Apparently, he decided that it was time for him to write a book. Murray Ebner is my guest. The book is titled Chosen for Reasons Unknown, A Holocaust Survivor's Journey. Murray, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, Murray, I understand that this book was based on the Emmy Award-winning documentary that was shown
Correct.
On PBS.
Correct.
And this is a DVD. It's called A Survivor's Journey, and it's at chosenforreasonsunknown.com, and we'll be sure to repeat that later on. Murray, there are many people that I've met through the years that I've interviewed that have spoken about their families and various experiences that they have had during the Second World War, whether it's with the Japanese or the Germans or what have you. And there are so many that say, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to even remotely touch upon the subject because it is a part of my life, it's where it was, and I don't want to bring it forth or to speak of it.
I wanted
to talk about this. What motivated you to take the time at this time in your life to write this fabulous book?
Well, in Columbus, we have several survivors. I was the only one who more or less pushed himself to see that everybody knows what actually happened. We have to know. We have to remember. We can't just let it go back to sleep because many thousands and even millions of people lost their lives. I lost my father, my mother. I had three brothers. I lost all three of my brothers. One was 17, 15, and 12, mm-hmm. The ages. I had seven uncles and six aunts. Every one of them were killed.
Mm-hmm. This happened with so many people. And we look at things that are going on today in the world, and there is still this kind of ugliness occurring. And I think it takes so much courage to be able to step back in time to bring forth the information. And let's start with the fact that you were born on September 20th in 1928. And at the time you were born, there was no hospital. You were born in Poland.
I was born in Poland, correct. Right outside Krakow. Not too far from Krakow.
Not too far from Krakow. And your dad was a very successful man.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your father.
Well, my father was in the real estate business. He also had building supplies, and he got along with all the people in the area. In fact, we were the only Jewish people that lived in a non-Jewish area. People loved him. My mother used to get neighbors who used to come over and discuss the world politics and whatever was going on in the world. They actually got along very well with almost all the people in the area.
Now, with your family, as you said, they were the only Jewish family in the community.
In the area.
There was news about Hitler's activities that were going on. But
Correct.
The people had such a harmonic environment, they didn't really believe what they were hearing, did they?
If somebody would tell him, Mr. Ebner, you should leave the country because Hitler's coming and he is mean, he's bad. And my father would say, I haven't done anything. I pay my taxes. people love me and I get along with everybody. Why should I leave this country? This is my home.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way a lot of people felt.
This is my
they
home.
Didn't
right.
really realize what was going on. And when you go back to those days, you know, we think of all the communication capacity we have today at this moment, the cell phones, the texting, the internet. Messages go around the world in seconds. Then
Correct.
It took weeks, maybe even months, sometimes in certain environments, years before people were aware of what was going on in other places.
That's right. That's right. Well, I came to this country because I found a cousin that was leading Germany, the DP camp, Germany, and he talked me into to come to America, and I'm very happy that I came here. I think this is the best country in the world, and I was drafted for the Korean War. I didn't leave. I said, well, I'm very proud to be an American and be. And I wasn't even a citizen yet, but I did everything that people told me to do, which I thought it was right.
One of the things that people do not hear a lot about, and that is that in 1933, when Goebbels was put in charge by Hitler for the Reich Minister for Public Enlightenment and Propaganda, one of the first things that he did was burn books. And
that's right.
He'd talk about not just Jewish works, but things by Albert Einstein, Sigmund Freud, Helen Keller.
Those are all important books.
Just anybody that had the capacity to express themselves through the written word, that was not going to be acceptable. That wasn't going to be acceptable at all.
Correct.
So this is something that was quite significant that you bring out in the book.
Yes. I just want to be sure that people, young and old, understand the book. It's not written, but it's difficult to read it. And I think people are going to love it, everybody who so far who took the book, and many of them already picked it up. They all loved the book. They couldn't wait to finish it.
The story that you give in the book, so much of what is in the first part of the book, is about the wonderful family environment that was there in Poland. And I think that it espouses a richness that many people yearn for today, and that is the communication with the neighbors, the interaction with the parents, the support of people and community, and just in general, it was a feeling of safety. Everybody sort of looked out for everybody else.
That's right. That's right. And I just wish there would be peace in this world and everybody should get along.
I agree. Now, Poland was attacked on May 24th, 1939. Am I correct?
No, it's September the 1st.
September the 1st, 1939. Right. Okay, let me... he made a vow that he was going to attack Poland. He made the announcement on May 24th. That was my error. Yes, that's September 1st, 1939. This is something, when you think back again to that time frame, there was information that was leaking out, but people weren't believing it. They weren't believing that this is something that could happen to them.
Who would ever believe that a maniac like Hitler, who will think of an idea of killing a people, building, like I call them slaughterhouses for human beings.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that he learned that from Stalin. I know from having had the opportunity to travel in Russia that he and Stalin. He learned so many things from Stalin. It was just unbelievable. The correlations between the two of them, they are just horrific. But regardless, the Soviet Union on September 17th attacked Poland. I mean, this is something you had two countries.
Two separate countries.
Two separate countries, yes. that came into the little area of Poland. Why? What did they want from Poland?
Well, actually, the mine was not Poland. Poland was just Poland was centrally located, so that was very important. But Poland itself could not go and fight the Russia and Poland. Russia and Germany, excuse me. So Germany had an eye on Poland because it's centrally located.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia was something that they planned to divide Poland a long time ago. The one took east, the one took west, and before you know it, they gobbled it up.
That's true. Now, you say during the winter of 1939, and I'm quoting directly from your book, the Polish elite and anyone who had any role in the cultural or scientific life in Poland mysteriously disappeared and were eventually exterminated. And the Nazis' statement for this mass murder was slaves don't need culture. And it's just phenomenal that this could be heard by so many different peoples, and yet they didn't believe that this was going on.
That's right. That's right.
We have similar things going on today.
Very similar things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is what's happening today. It's uncalled for, and peace could be made, and both Egypt they had no reason to give up. They did not want to give up their recognizing what was going on in this world.
Mm-hmm. Now, something I had not been aware of is that there was a Jewish police force.
Yes.
That I was totally unaware of. Tell us about that. What was that? Who was a part of that? And what was their purpose?
The purpose was because the Germans gave orders for the Jewish police to do all the dirty work for them. For example, if you are the police force, you get some more rations, and you have to supply the labor for the Germans. This way the Germans don't make their hands dirty. And also, for example, if you want some money or gold or something, the Jewish police had to go find it someplace.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a statement in here that once Joseph Goebbels, who was the real person that was behind the designing of posters and documentaries, he was an accomplished public speaker, he gained complete control of the radio waves, and I'm reading from your book, newspapers, films, and loud...
Everything.
He controlled everything. All media. 80 million people were totally deprived of independent thought. And because they were constantly pummeled with propaganda, it was just amazing. They bought into it. Most of the 80 million bought into it.
Correct. Even more than the 80 million, because the Italians and the Polish and Czechoslovakian and all the other people also believed him.
You and your family finally had to leave. You had to escape. And I feel that your story about your family, your mother...
Well, it was so difficult. It was so difficult, especially for my mother. We had to hide in the forest, and we had to cross creeks, and it was very difficult for her to jump over some creeks, and... we had to sleep on the outside. Many times we were eaten up by mosquitoes. It was actually horrible.
I was reading this portion of your book, and I thought, so many people like to say, let's go back to the good old days, and they don't realize that you don't have sanitation, you don't have a lot of things, and people like you and your family and the many millions of others that were trying to find a safe haven, they lived in this environment, and it was totally unsanitary. You were in bitter, bitter cold. You didn't have enough food. All of these things were going on, and Mother Nature isn't especially friendly.
No, especially wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
Especially wintertime, we were covered with lice and dirt, and hardly ever showed up, and sometimes we had to go walk much faster and walk the direction that the Germans figured that we're not going to be there. So we were there, and it was hell.
Mm-hmm. Now, the money in Poland was worth nothing. The Polish currency had no value at all, correct?
No, I wouldn't say it had no value. It had some value, but I would say that without currency, you'd be in trouble. And, of course, the Polish people wanted to trade with valuable stuff like gold, and sometimes we had to promise them something. My father promised them a lot of stuff, that he's going to do this for them, that for them, after the war is over. And then it came to a point that my mother was scared to death that we're going to get caught and we're all going to get killed.
You managed to get work. And when I say get work, you were taken out in a truck. You were able to bring some food home to your family. It wasn't much. But
correct.
You were in a particular environment, and your detail with this is very, very clear. And there was a family that you worked for. You would shine boots, you'd clean
correct.
Floors, whatever was necessary.
Correct.
And that actually is what saved your life, because there was this truck that came through that would
correct.
Pick up young ones like you. How old were you when you were doing this?
I was 13 years old.
You were 13.
Yeah.
And tell us what happened with your family, because this truck, what was this, who was this driver of this truck?
Well, the Germans used to come around with two different type of trucks. One had signs to be resettled. The other one had signs you're volunteering for work. And me, I thought actually I was volunteering for work. So at first I thought that somebody made a mistake. But later on I learned that I had to come back again and again. And I was actually the lucky one that actually, they used me more as a janitor or a maid than anything else. And for this, many times I used to get some bread to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But the bread was always like 2 or 3 days old.
Now, you ended up being in a work camp called Pasov. Pasov, is that how it's pronounced? It's P-L-A-S-C-O-V.
Pasov was a cemetery where what's the name? Finland had the factories.
Pasov. So you ended up going there
from the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
From the ghetto. From the ghetto, I went to Pasov. From Pasov, I went to Kielce. From Kielce, I went to Auschwitz. From Auschwitz, I went to Trebinja, and then back to Auschwitz. And then I was on a death march out of Auschwitz.
When the movie Schindler's List was made, and you became aware of that, what was your response to that movie?
I never went to see it because I was afraid I might see some people that I recognized.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to see my parents over there, and I didn't want them to see suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So I never went to see the movie at all. And the whole family went to see it, but except me.
Well, I can understand that, because your statement is very, very true. Now, when you ended up being put in these camps, you lied about your age, because
I'm sorry. I actually did not lie about my age. I was taken from the Krakow ghetto, actually it was Bosnia Gera, and then they picked me up and on the way to Krakow, and they asked me how old I was, and I told them I was 15 and a half years old, which I really was, and then somebody marked me down, marked it down for 13. He made me feel like I'm older than I was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know in your book, this fellow said, you've got to be a certain age. Otherwise, you may not make it.
Actually, I was 16 years old, but he marked me down that I was older.
Mm-hmm. Because that was the way that he said you would be able to survive. Otherwise, you wouldn't.
Correct.
So when you were going through this, and in 2.5 years, your life went from being with a loving family, having a very healthy, wonderful environment, to living in an utter hell. That's the only way I'd know how to describe it. And then all of a sudden, things started changing.
Oh, yes.
How did they change?
Well, things became harder for me and harder for me. And, of course, I had to live without my parents, my family. You know, and I never lived by myself, always with my family. But we were a very close family. My father and my mother were very close. And we brothers always got into a little small fights, but otherwise we were very close.
You had a very special experience one night when you were laying in your, call it a prisoner bunk.
God was with me.
Yes. I mean, this is a very, very powerful thing because it saved your life. Share with us what that experience was.
It was something told me, don't sleep in your usual bunk. And like my chest, something on my chest was laying. Something told me, like, if my father or God said, don't sleep in your bunk because something's about to happen. And something like pushed me away from my bunk, so for me to sleep under a bunk, so I possibly hiding. And I never, ever, ever experienced that before. And in the middle of the night, they came looking for me, and I think I may have been on the list to be shot that mm-hmm. night, because three people escaped, and so 10 people had to be shot.
Mm-hmm. So you had a visitation from the other side that said, move, and you felt all of what you just described. That is an incredibly powerful experience.
I'm thinking sometimes about it, but the way it was is unbelievable.
Then you had another experience where you didn't think you were going to make it when a guard found you and said, don't move or I'll shoot. And
that's the very beginning.
That was really something, because the guard was the same age you were.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he said, if you were 3 years older, I'd have shot you on the spot. Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. They would have killed me. No questions asked, because actually I tried to escape. I tried to look it over, see what the guards are doing, and I couldn't, just see myself being shot or killed. Mm. Of course, everybody wants to protect their lives. But this guy caught me almost red-handed. If I would have had a tool to cut the wire in my pocket, he would have shot me.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that was done to you, you were given a number, B2992. That was tattooed under your arm.
Right.
And there was a man that was standing next to you, and you were trying to rub it off, and he said, don't even bother. Don't even bother.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's who you are now. You don't have a name anymore.
Correct. and I had it removed here a few years ago at the Riverside Hospital.
Mm-hmm. You had a wonderful attitude because you said, I am Monique Ebner, and someday, somehow, I'm going to get out of this evil place and be back with my family.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart. This is so true, so really, so real. Because I was just dreaming. I have to go back to my family. I thought for sure they're all waiting for me at home when I escaped from the death march. And I hid myself and then escaped. I thought sure they'd be waiting for me, but nobody was waiting for me.
There was so much that overwhelmed people when the Germans were finally defeated that I know some of the interviews I've done with people that witnessed the camps firsthand, it was beyond their comprehension. They honestly couldn't even wrap their minds about what they were actually seeing. And there are people today that even say, this did not happen. And I can recall listening just a week ago on a television special that was discussing not the Holocaust, but a different type of Holocaust in Rwanda. And how within 100 days, 900,000 people had been butchered. That to
butchered is the right word.
Just butchered. And when I heard that number, I thought, this wasn't that long ago. These stories have to be put out there because people need to know that there are people that do this and they will continue to do it, and we have to stand up against them. And that is what I feel your book is about, because there are times when people do not have the capacity to stand up themselves because everything's been taken away from them. They don't have any weapons. They don't have
They took everything away from us.
Yeah, they took everything away.
Everything away. And we had very little food. We had to steal food in order to survive. Or you ever took a bath or wash up or anything like that.
Eventually, the war is over. And
yes.
You were able to go to an orphanage on Caldwell Avenue in the Bronx. And you...
Before that, I was in two other orphanage homes. I was in an orphanage home in Krakow, Poland. Then I was in an orphanage home in Munich, Germany. And then I came to the United States, and I was in an orphanage home in Bronx, New York.
Now, in the year 2000, you made a special trip back to Poland, and you decided you were going to go back to the town that you had been born and raised in. And that is where, because of a neighbor that had survived the war, that was living there, you found out about the fate of your family.
Uh-huh. By the way, my son just walked in.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I know he worked with you on this book.
Oh, he worked very hard on the book with me. And he also was responsible. I also had a video, DVD, a wonderful DVD. Did you see it?
No, I have not seen the DVD.
I would like for you to see it. It's a very good DVD.
Well, one of the things that you said in your book, and it was right at the end, that when you found out about your family and your brother Nuta, she told you what happened to him and how they, were killed. And she witnessed the shooting
Correct.
Of your brother. And
Correct.
Even though that was so heartbreaking for you, to your amazement, and this trip, the whole family's there, they're going through and sharing these experiences with you. 3 months later, this neighbor was gone. She died. She passed away. It's almost as if the lady was around long enough so that you could get the final answers to your family.
You're right.
To what happened, and then it's like, it's okay, I can say goodbye now.
It meant so much to me.
Mm-hmm.
It meant so much to me.
Your book is loaded with photographs, information. The details are important. And for those of you listening, sometimes you may feel, gee whiz, why even talk about things like this? It's ugly. It is unpleasant. But it's truth. And when we close our eyes, when we close our eyes to the realities of the ugliness that a few can present, we have no one but ourselves to fault. We must have the courage to look at what's there, and there are things that are going on in the world today. There needs to be the right information out there so the right action can be taken. Murray Ebner is a man. He was chosen for reasons unknown, and that's why this book has been put together. His son also has worked with him very diligently on this. Now, if you want to find out more about this story, go to murrayebner.com, and that's MurrayEbner.com, murrayebner.com. And there you will not only find out about the book, but you will find out about the DVD. That is an Emmy award-winning documentary about a man's journey to find peace, not only for himself, but for his family, and to be able to share the truth with a world that perhaps has gotten a little sleepy when it comes time to wake up to the realities that we have to pay attention to what is going on.
By the way, the DVD is shown on PBS and all over the country.
Yes, it's wonderful. Murray, it's been delightful having you as a guest today. Thank you so much. It's been a delight. I wish
you
and your family the very best. This is Donna Sebo. Check out murrayebner.com. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Thank you very much. Should I hold on?
Yes, sir.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And by the way, if you can, check out murrayebner.com because of that wonderful DVD that has been done. It's a PBS special. Again, it's an Emmy Award winner. When you are able to talk with people in their 80s, their 90s, and share their stories, I think their stories are very, very special. It behooves us, I think, to listen to what people have gone through. When you have elders like this, who can share what they have lived through and experienced, it'll give you a sense of feeling that no matter what life throws at you, you're going to be able to withstand it. Sometimes, because of all of the abundance that we have around us, we forget that we truly are blessed in so many different ways. But those blessings only come about when we're good custodians and we take care of them. So I really enjoy having people like Marie Ebner as guests on my show, because I know that they have earned all of the gold stars that they really should be getting. I wanted to share a story with you about Lumna Springtime Wheels. Oh, before I forget, if you want to give me a call, telephone lines are open, 888-815-9756. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then, of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. Call me at 888-815-9756, and I'll light your life up with a little bit of intuitive insight. On April 24th, 1953, in the Gulf of Thailand, there were three overlapping luminous wheels with curving spokes. They lit up the water for 20 minutes beside a merchant vessel called Rafaela. Now, this is what was going on. More than one person witnessed it. Two wheels were spinning counterclockwise, and one was spinning clockwise. And every rotation took 20 seconds. That's right. The people were timing it. Well, in April 1995, in the Persian Gulf, two officers aboard a ship called the British Reliance noticed something unusual on the waves. It looked like a blue phosphorus type of something. It was very luminous. It was just really bright. When they were watching this, wind began to swirl all around the ship. The next thing they know, the entire ship is surrounded by bright blue light wheels. They said this went on for as far as you could see. It was like it went on to the horizon. This is what they noticed in 1995. These wheels were 20 yards in diameter with 12-inch thick spokes. The wheels were spinning with utter random, and it was like they were playing with each other. They were chasing each other, and this went on for about 18 minutes. Can you imagine having an experience like that? There was an oceanographer whose name is P.J. Herring. He said, "Never have so many wheels been described so close together." In April of 1982, a unique thing occurred in the China Sea. There was a ship called the Siam. They watched a 2.5-hour marine display. It began with two sets of brilliant parallel bars, which were rushing right above the water surface towards the vessel. And then suddenly these bars changed into three rotating wheels. They said the spokes were so large they seemed to reach the horizon. After 20 minutes of this activity going on, a new set of four bars came up, and they turned into four wheels. The next thing that happened, the wheels were replaced by a pattern of blue-white spots. Someone timed it because they said these white spots flickered 114 times per minute, and they were just underneath the surface of the water. Someone even was picking up water samples because of the luminescence of the water. They said no phosphorescent organisms were in the water at all. Three mysteries of the sea. Oh, and I'll tell you, there are so many stories about the sea and what people have experienced. It's just absolutely amazing. But all of that activity, gives a speculation to a lot of questions, doesn't it? Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. If you like lasagna, but you'd like to do something a little bit different, how about a polenta layer cake? Just another word for lasagna. And you could have it with meat sauce, or you could fix it with a sauce without the meat. What would be your preference? Well, that would be up to you. I've got a wonderful recipe here, and so I thought I would share that with you, so you might want to get your pad of paper and pen handy, and be ready, because I'll share it with you. It's so easy to fix, and it's an entirely different twist on one of the most favorite Italian dishes that can ever be fixed. I've got one recipe for lasagna that seems to take hours to prepare, but oh, the flavors are out of this world. Today we've got prepackaged lasagna. We've got lasagna noodles you don't even have to cook before you lay them in the pan. They'll cook themselves. It's just amazing what we've got today. Anyway, I want to share that recipe with you because I think it's a cool one to have. And if you're like us and you're still enjoying brisk temperatures, yes, spring is here, but it's a brisk spring. Well, this would just be perfect for that. I think it would really be enjoyed. I wanted to give you a little bit of information about colors. There are people that have done a lot of research on colors, and this has always been something that's fascinated me, because scientifically so much has been proven very, very true. And you often can get a read on people depending on what their favorite colors are. What do they put around themselves? Well, if you are a person that loves purple, you're an individual that likes change. Now, purple is a cross between cool blue and fiery red. And Letice Eisman, she is a color expert. She said these people usually are very, very smart and creative, the people that love purple. And they don't like to get into too much of a rut. They like to do things differently. And she said, for those people that have this love of purple, cross-climbing is absolutely wonderful because you don't want to be bored. So she suggests seek out the rock walls that you can climb because climbing suits the nature of exploration that you have. Now, what if you like orange or yellow? Well, you're an energetic firecracker. That's right. And, of course, orange is such a high, high energy color, and yellow just makes you feel good. It's just marvelous. And usually this type of person that loves these colors, they've got a very optimistic attitude about them. They like being a team player, and they want to be with a buddy system. Let's say when it comes to being physically fit, well, all you have to do is get them a good DVD they can exercise to. They'll be happy to do it, but they really like being in the buddy system. It makes them feel great. They get things done, and they have a wonderful disposition. Now, what if blue or green is your favorite color? Well, you like being flexible, both with your mind as well as your body. And blue, the color blue, stimulates the pineal gland, or pineal gland, as some people would say it, and it helps to free your mind of worries and inhibitions. And green, the color green, triggers production of melatonin, which helps you to relax. That's why people, when they go out into the forest, they just feel absolutely wonderful. So you like to do the type of things physically that help you to tame stress and can relax. Well, yoga is probably going to be the thing for you, acupuncture, walking. Whenever you can be around something green, it needs to be in your environment. Now, what if you're a person that loves red? Ah, yes. Well, you like to compete. You're highly energized. You find that it just is wonderful for you. Well, red stimulates the adrenal glands, and you like to be active. You like things that challenge you, and you enjoy developing good disciplines. And for those of you that have that kind of love for the color red, pumping iron can be something for you that really is going to do good things. You like being active and you like working your body to the max. Now, what if you like pink? Well, that means you're an endurance machine. Letice has got it down here. Pink calms. It's de-stressing. They have pink rooms in prisons, or at least they used to. If ever somebody got really, really agitated, they put them in the pink room. There was a particular shade of pink. And believe it or not, the prisoners would calm down. It was just absolutely incredible. You figure out how to do things. You're the type of person that you can do marathons because of the capacity of self-discipline, and you really like doing things like power walking. It is wonderful for you. And if you have a buddy, you even like it better, but you really like having that consistency, and you don't mind going that extra mile. Well, that's just a little bit of stuff about color that I thought you may have some fun with today. When we come back, I'll share with you the polenta layer cake, polenta lasagna. That's Donna speaking. With a meat sauce, or you can take the meat out of the sauce and make it totally vegetarian, whatever you prefer. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, and for those of you up in Alaska, I'll give you the recipe in just a minute. 888-815-9756 is our call in number. For those of you up in Alaska, I'm going to be traveling to the far north as of May the 9th. I'm going to be up there for a week. I'll be in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and if you would like to meet with me while I'm there, just give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604, 800-872-8852. Okay, polenta layer cake? No, it's lasagna. Different application for a traditional recipe that's just wonderful. Now, I'm going to give you the ingredients for the sauce and then also the ingredients for the polenta. Now, for the polenta, all you need is a tablespoon of kosher salt. You're going to need 2 cups of polenta cornmeal. There will be some boiling water, and then I'll tell you what you need to do to bring it all together. You're going to need a little olive oil, and you're going to need 8 ounces of a pecorino romano cheese, or the equivalent. You'll need a half a pound for that. Okay, now here's the sauce. This is what you need for the sauce. You're going to need 6 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 6 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 onion minced, and you want to make it minced. You don't want chopped. You want it minced. And a carrot, 1 carrot chopped, 1 small rib of celery with the leaves. You want to chop that up. You're going to need 1 teaspoon of ground or crushed fennel seeds. I like a little bit of a stronger flavor, so I use a little bit more myself. You need 1 pound of ground lean pork or mixed pork and beef. Now, if you're a vegetarian, you don't need to include this, but this is for the meat sauce. You need 1/2 cup of red wine, 3 tablespoons of tomato paste, and 1 can of plum tomatoes drained. And you want to put the juice to the side. And you want to make sure that you chop these plum tomatoes up. And then you need 3 tablespoons of minced fresh basil leaves and 1 teaspoon of sea salt. Now, if you're a vegetarian, if you're a real vegan, you may not want this because of the cheese that's in it. But if you're a vegetarian and you want to have a meat substitute, you might want to use a tofu. Try it. See how you like it. Okay, this is how you go with it. The sauce, you're going to put your oil in the skillet, heat it up. You're going to put your onion and carrot and celery in there. You saute it, maybe about 10 minutes until it's nice and soft. Then you add your fennel seeds. and your pork. If you're using meat, you want to saute stirring occasionally. Now, this has, should be done over low heat until the meat starts to brown. It'll take about 4 minutes. Then you want to add your wine, and you want to cook this mixture until the liquid is evaporated, about 1 minute. And then you dilute the tomato paste in some, while this is going on, dilute your tomato paste in some of the juice that has been put aside. And then you're going to add that to the meat with the tomatoes. And a half a cup of the tomato juice, if you should be putting aside, you want to take that half a cup of reserved tomato juice, basil and salt, put it all in the pan, stir it well. Don't cover it totally, but you want to keep the lid askew and simmer it over low heat for an hour. And every once in a while, just go in and give it a stir. The sauce should become really, really nice and thick. And, of course, it's just going to smell wonderful. Fennel just adds a marvelous fragrance to it. And if you find your sauce is drying out, so to speak, it's not as liquidy as you would like it to be, add a little bit more of the tomato juice that might be sitting on your counter. Now, your polenta, while your sauce is cooking, you want to bring 7 cups of water to a boil, and you want a deep pot. You want to put in your kosher salt and then reduce your heat so that it's at medium, and very slowly pour in your polenta. And you want to stir it in, and you want to constantly stir, because the polenta is going to get very, very thick. And when it's right at the right consistency, it starts to pull away from the inside of the pot. If you find it gets thick, but it's not pulling away from the sides, add a little bit more boiling water and continue to stir it until it's thick and creamy. And that may take some time. It could take about, 20 to 30 minutes, depending on how your stove works and how your pot conducts heat. So your polenta, once it's cooked, you want to put it on a surface that is going to be oiled, and you want to spread it into a quarter-inch thick rectangle. And you just leave it alone. Your sauce is cooking away. Your sauce has to cook for maybe an hour, maybe a little bit more. It'll take about 15 minutes for the cool temperature of the polenta to be just perfect. And so then what you have to do is take a 13 by 9-inch baking dish, preheat your oven to 450 degrees. You want to oil this baking dish. You cut your polenta into 3-inch squares and put half of your squares in the baking dish. If you have to, you trim it away, whatever you need to do to fit, and put half of your sauce over the squares, spreading it so that all the polenta is covered. Put half of your cheese over it and repeat the layering with the polenta, the sauce, and the cheese. And then you put it in that 450-degree oven for about 15, 20 minutes, and it's going to be piping hot. The cheese is going to be just a golden brown, and let it sit for about 10 minutes. This is perfect for a potluck, for anything that is, you know, serving a lot of people. This is a great meal. And, of course, I always like to add extra cheese. But it's a simple meal. It is tasty. It's flavorful. And, you know, when it comes to the spaghetti sauce, you can experiment with that. If you have a family sauce, it's just absolutely awesome. You can use it, just like this one that I gave you the recipe for, with the polenta. It's a different flavor, a twist on a traditional recipe that I think is unique, and I'll tell you what, kids really like it. So you might enjoy it too. I know we are just about out of time. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about wills, trusts, and probates. My guest is going to be John Farr. This is an attorney who has a great deal of knowledge and experience regarding this. Wills sometimes can cause problems in probate situations, and also when it comes to trust, and vice versa. So we are going to have quite a bit of information from John Farr that I think is going to open our eyes to how important it is to understand these variables so that when we leave this earth, the people that we are leaving things to are not going to feel like they're going to have a lifetime of headaches. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous day. Count your blessings. You've got a lot to be grateful for. And come back and join me tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.